Great, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to present some of this work. There we go. Great, so I'm going to be talking about sexual orientation differences in teen pregnancy and oral contraceptive use. So as a disclosure, neither I nor any of my co-authors have anything to disclose. So teen pregnancy in the U.S., despite that it has been on the decline in the last couple of years, still remains a major public health issue. The most recent data is from 2010, which shows that there's about 34 pregnancies per 1,000 teenagers. And regardless of the intent of the pregnancy, so if a woman intends to have a teen pregnancy, we still see a range of adverse health and social outcomes, both for the teen mother as well as the baby. So for the teen mom, she's more likely to have a quicker repeat pregnancy and more likely to become a single mother in comparison to if she had just waited until she were in her 20s. She's also more likely to achieve less educational attainment and have more unemployment, poverty, and public assistance reliance. And for her infant, they're more likely to be premature and die before the age of one, as well as do more poorly on a range of indicators of health and social well-being. So in regards to sexual minorities, sadly, the research is really sparse. Nonetheless, we do have some prior studies that suggest that sexual minority females may be at an increased risk for experiencing a teen pregnancy. And we think this is really for two main reasons. So the first of which is that we think that the major risk factors for having a teen pregnancy are more common among sexual minority women. And additionally to that, we think that there may be particular risk factors that are happening among sexual minority teens. So going back to the first piece, so the major risk factors are more common among sexual minorities. We know this is true on a couple of angles. So earlier sexual initiation, as well as having more sexual partners, of course, puts you at an increased risk for a teen pregnancy, as well as having sex with a male partner. So we've seen this recently in some literature that we put out. This came out last year in the Journal of Adolescent Health, showing that this might not be exactly intuitive to what we might expect, right? So just because a woman identifies as a sexual minority, in this case either as mostly heterosexual, bisexual, or lesbian, we're still seeing a very high proportion of all of those having some kind of male sexual contact. So they're at risk for having a teen pregnancy. In addition to that, we also think that they may be less likely to use highly effective contraceptives, in particular oral contraceptives. We did some research on the same paper showing that sexual minorities were less likely to get a pap smear, which is exactly when OCs are offered. There's also, this graph shows exactly that relationship. So this is pap test use by sexual orientation. So you can see in all of those sexual orientation groups, so the mostly heterosexual and bisexual as lesbian groups, are on an incredibly decreased risk for having a pap smear. And there's also a really interesting relationship in terms of oral contraceptive use and pap test use. So we have a paper that's just going into press now at AJPH that's showing that some of these disparities around pap smear use actually really seem to be driven by OC use. So we found that the disparities, about 40% of that, could be explained by a lack of OC use. So we know sexual minority youth are less likely to get a pap smear, and they're also less likely to use OCs, and a lot of that is linked. So there's definitely more we can look into that. And as I mentioned, there are definitely additional risk factors. Some of Elizabeth Saywerk's work really examined some of this, that sexual minority women may be at an increase for particular reasons. So they might be engaging in risky sexual behavior with men, potentially to hide their sexual orientation. And we'll dig into this a little bit more once we get into our findings. So to put teen pregnancy in a historical context, I think it's important to remember that this is definitely a complex problem and has been changing over time. So we know that sex ed has been evolving, and as comprehensive sex ed has become more prevalent, we know that that leads to a reduction in teen pregnancy. Additionally, contraceptive technologies have changed, so we've seen an increase in available technologies that teens can use that are highly effective. And we also have seen attitudes around sexual orientation changing over time. And so all of this may have an impact not only on teen pregnancy, but also on teen OC use. And these graphs depict that. So we can see more teens reporting that they've used some kind of contraception at their first sexual intercourse, and also the rapid decline in teen pregnancy. And so this manuscript, what I'll be reporting today, is just under review, and the title of which is Sexual Orientation Differences in Teen Pregnancy and Oral Contraceptive Use, an Examination Across Two Generations. And I want to thank my co-authors, some of who are here in the audience. So this includes Heather Corliss, Stacey Mismar, Margie Rosario, Donna Spiegelman, and Bryn Austin. So our objective was really to examine exactly how sexual orientation is associated with disparities in teen pregnancy and OC use among adolescent females and into intergenerational cohorts. And this was really threefold. We wanted to see initially if there were any disparities by sexual orientation, and we also wanted to see the intergenerational effect. So it's been thought generally in the teen pregnancy literature that if you are the child of a teen pregnancy, so if your mother had a teen pregnancy, that it may have some kind of effect on your own risk for having a teen pregnancy. So we wanted to explore that using mother-daughter pairs. And then finally, we just wanted to explore some of the historical cohort differences, since we've seen that changing over time. So we did this using two prospective cohort studies, the Nurses Health Study 2, which is almost 120,000 female nurses, who were 25 to 42 at baseline, which was in 1989. So their teen years were really in the 1970s and early 80s. And then an additional cohort that included almost 20,000 of their children, so that included both boys and girls, who were 9 to 14 at their baseline, which is in 1996. So they were primarily teens in the 90s and early aughts. So our analysis was restricted to just female participants in both those cohorts who reported not only the sexual orientation, but also some basic sociodemographic variables, including age, race, and their geographic region. So our final sample size was almost 90,000. So of course, there's a lot of complexity when we start thinking about sexual orientation, which I'm sure a lot of people in this room can appreciate. On the nurses to cohort, we asked them really about their identity question. So we asked whether or not you're currently sexually active, what is your sexual orientation or identity? And their options, as you can see, are 1 through 5. So everything from heterosexual down to prefer not to respond. We chose to exclude the none of these or prefer not to answer just for interpretability. So as you can see on the right, those are the categories that we then ended up with. So a nurses to women could identify as a heterosexual, bisexual, or lesbian. And then in the GUTS cohort, we used a separate question that was adapted from the Minnesota Adolescent Health Survey. And this really got at a sort of a combined element about identity and attraction. So this asked, which of the following best describes your feelings? And again, 1 through 6. Completely heterosexual, attracted to persons of the opposite sex. Ooh, it's getting crazy in here. I like it. Some interesting sounds. So as you can see, that's sort of one category, and then it gets more into finer detail, right? So mostly heterosexual, bisexual, and similar to the nurses too, we again decided to exclude the unsure for interpretability and also collapse some categories for power as well as seeing similar patterns with our outcomes. So we collapsed the mostly heterosexual and bisexual, and we collapsed the mostly homosexual and completely homosexual. So the categories then, again, are to the right. So you could be completely heterosexual with same-sex partners. So that was an additional item that we used to get at some of the behavior items. So we asked really about the sex of your sexual contacts. So this is the only category we then combined that element. And then you could also report being mostly heterosexual, bisexual, and then finally lesbian. So it's important to keep in mind that someone could certainly endorse being a lesbian, but it doesn't necessarily remark anything about their sexual partners. And so for our outcome ascertainment, this was done retrospectively at baseline in nurses too. So because they were enrolled when they were 25 to in their early 40s, obviously anything that happened in their teen years was done retrospectively, whereas in the GUTS cohort, they were enrolled much earlier, so all of that was done prospectively. So we defined teen as at or before age 19, and of course we were looking particularly at pregnancy and OC use. Now, of course, as I mentioned, with contraceptive technologies changing, in the GUTS cohort, we're really interested in getting at really highly effective, sort of prescription-based contraceptives. And so not only did that include OCs, but that also included the patch, the ring, depo, as well as injectables. And so for our statistical analysis, we used log binomial models to estimate risk ratios. And then because the GUTS cohort includes siblings, we used generalized estimating equations. And then for our historical cohort differences, we used meta-analysis techniques, so essentially looking for heterogeneity between the two cohorts to see if there were actually any statistical differences over time. And so these are some just of our baseline results. So as you can see, among the almost 82,000 nurses to women, about 99% of them, as you can see, this is very truncated, reported being heterosexual, less than 1% as bisexual, and 1% as lesbian. And then you can see some other baseline demographics there at the bottom. And then among the GUTS cohort, so again, almost 7,000 participants there, we had 84% report being completely heterosexual, 1% is completely heterosexual, but also endorsing that they had same-sex partners, 14% is mostly heterosexual or bisexual, and then just 1% is lesbian. So then these are our results. I can orient you to the table because there's definitely a lot going on here. So as you can see on the x-axis, this is sexual orientation. So that runs across the bottom. And then the y-axis is the percent that have used OCs before the age of 20. So this is teen OC use. And you can also see this is broken out by cohort. So the gray bars are the GUTS participants, and then the white bars are their mothers and the Nurses 2 cohort. So not only can we examine some of the cohort differences here, which as you can clearly see, the GUTS participants are much more likely to be using contraceptives, but we can also start comparing some of the sexual orientation groups against one another. So as you can see, these lines demonstrate that comparing to completely heterosexual as our reference group. So in both of the cohorts, lesbians are less likely, whereas other sexual minorities are more likely to use OCs as teenagers compared to their heterosexual peers. So if we were just to interpret one of these bars, you might take the very bottom number. So in that case, GUTS lesbians have 0.72 times or 28% reduced risk of using OCs compared to their completely heterosexual counterparts. And similarly, then these are our results for our teen pregnancy. So again, you can compare the two cohorts really easily. You can see over time that the GUTS participants are much less likely to experience a teen pregnancy across the board. But we also see that all the sexual minority groups, except the Nurses 2 lesbians, were at an increased risk for having a teen pregnancy. And we see relative risk even as high as 5.82. So that's almost a 600% increased risk among GUTS participants who are identifying as completely heterosexual but are also endorsing that they've had same-sex contact. And so the implications of this are definitely really complex. As I mentioned in the introduction, we think that the teen pregnancy risk factors in the general population are more common among sexual minorities. We were particularly interested to examine that group that identified as completely heterosexual but also had same-sex contact since they were at such an increased risk for experiencing a teen pregnancy. We hypothesized that sort of identifying as completely heterosexual but then endorsing same-sex contact might just be a marker for some kind of risky sexual behavior. We also know that that group has twice as much sexual abuse history, which raises teen pregnancy risk. And then as I mentioned with Elizabeth Saywork's work, we also know that there are additional risk factors that might be specific to sexual minority youth. They may be engaging in strategies to sort of avoid or cope with some of the stigma around their sexual orientation. These might include substance abuse as well as sexual intercourse, both of which can lead to pregnancy. It's also very possible that some of these youth may be purposely seeking out having a pregnancy so as to hide their sexual orientation. On a more structural level, it's important to think about how sex education may play a role. We know that sexual minority health are often overlooked in sex education, so it's very possible that they're not being empowered with the correct information to be able to make correct decisions, not only about contraceptives, but just generally about healthy decisions. So the results for some of our other hypotheses about the intergenerational effect, we found that having a Nurses 2 mom had no effect on having your own teen pregnancy among the GUTS participants, nor did it contribute at all to some of the disparities that we saw in sexual orientation. In regards to the historical cohort differences, as you might have guessed just from looking at those white and gray bars, we found significant differences between the two cohorts on both outcomes. And so the implications of this, I think it's important to remember that teen pregnancy is really complex. Thinking about the intergenerational effects, there may be many other factors at play. And the historical cohort differences are definitely backed up with what we have seen in some of the national data with contraceptives seeing a huge uptick and teen pregnancies declining. Great, so some of our limitations. This is, of course, as you can see, a really limited area in the research, so it's really exciting to think about not only some of our limitations, but how that might lend itself to the opportunities in future research. So we didn't have a representative sample, so this might limit generalizability, at least in a sort of nationally representative context. The women in the GUTS cohort are daughters of nurses. They may have more healthcare access than the general population, so that might even overestimate some of the OC use that we're seeing and therefore underestimate the teen pregnancies compared to a completely national set. We also couldn't capture pregnancy intention, right? So we don't know if these pregnancies were intended or unintended, which a lot of data sets struggle with. And we're also only able to study female adolescents in our cohort. There's definitely some literature that shows that male sexual minority adolescents may also be at an increased risk for having a pregnancy involvement, but we just didn't collect data on that. And then it's important to keep in mind that sexual identity as well as behavior are really fluid, so we can't necessarily establish temporality, but we definitely have some ongoing work, both that Miles Ott has done in GUTS, as well as we're doing in Nurses 2, to really look at some changes over time in reported sexual orientation and some predictors of that. Nonetheless, we had a very large sample that wasn't recruited on the basis of sexual orientation. It's one of the first studies to examine teen OC use and teen pregnancy as well among various groups. We're able to examine historical trends, and we can also more precisely observe different sexual orientation groups. So not only are we examine completely heterosexual groups compared to sexual minorities, we also look within the sexual minority groups to see how those disparities compare. So in summary, teen pregnancy rates have declined over the last few decades, in part due to increased use of effective contraceptives. But disparities by sexual orientation definitely remain, which is the biggest takeaway. And so clinical care as well as public health practitioners need to know about these disparities and develop innovative ways to help women not only avoid teen pregnancy during the adolescence, but also avoid subsequent adverse outcomes for parents as well as their children. So I just want to thank some of my collaborators again, as well as the funding, and thank you so much for your attention.